So there's this YouTube channel you guys have to check out. It's called Cook the Books, and it's a new channel where Daddy and his daughter are recreating recipes. Watson, who's the dad, and Nina, who's the daughter, they go shopping, they prepare and cook together. It's a really great bonding session, a ton of fun, and getting Nina involved in experiencing new foods, ingredients, tastes, and cultures. It's a great YouTube channel. It's called Cook the Books. It's youtube.com/cookthebooks. You guys got to check this out. Trust me, you'll be glad you did.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining me on this Sunday, May 5th, 2019. Cinco de Mayo. For those of you that celebrate, happy Cinco de Mayo. For the rest of us that just like Taco Bell or Mexican food and tequila, well, ole. I mean, that's pretty much the extent of, I'm going to assume, 75 to 80% of my listeners that don't partake in the cultural part of the Cinco de Mayo holiday, but rather the festivities, if you will. So welcome to the rest of you, and thank you again for joining me on this Sunday, the 5th of May. And it is a special day because not only is it the wrestling nostalgia portion of the week, I've got an announcement as far as the co-hosts go. I know that I announced a little more information last Thursday, but I got an update for you guys in just a minute. And it's not just Wrestling Nostalgia Night, it is also Game of Thrones. So those of you that are followers of Game of Thrones, it is a big night for you guys, and I'm a big fan too, because we are four episodes into an eight-episode season, and I'm excited for it. I won't go too much into it, because this is not a Game of Thrones podcast, but rather a wrestling one, but I can't go any further without mentioning the fact that this is an important day if you are a Game of Thrones fan. So, all right, so one quick announcement, and then I'm going to get to the very, very special wrestling nostalgia portion, one of my favorite memories as a fan, and I'm going to get to that in a moment. You probably could guess by the title of what exactly that is. But so as far as my co-hosts go, last week I mentioned that I got so many requests that what I decided to do was kind of bring people on and do a bit of a trial run for a few weeks and then make a decision from there. And so I've sifted through the candidates, and this week I'm going to be joined by Angelique, who has her own show, or did in the past anyway. So she is not a new fan of wrestling, but bringing herself back to wrestling, and has some audio experience. Also, it's not bad to have a female on the show, because I think that adds a dynamic that is not common in many wrestling shows. Actually, I don't even know if there is a wrestling show out there that has a male and female co-host. I don't really recall one anyway, but so that would be a cool dynamic. And so I'm excited to bring her on the show Thursday. It'll be the Thursday evening show that we review Raw and SmackDown from this week. And so that's going to be pretty darn cool to bring her here and see how things go. So I'll be doing that again, as I said, for a few weeks, and then taking things from there. So, all right, let's set the stage here for the wrestling nostalgia portion of this show. And obviously I give you guys audio because I am big on letting you relive the moments as I did. And this particular one was back in 2003. And it was the return of Stone Cold Steve Austin at No Way Out. And it was in Montreal, the Bell Center. And what's so special about this compared to all other Stone Cold returns, and there's been a few of them, from his neck injury in 2000, from getting fired and rehired as the sheriff. I mean, you can go on and on. Him getting fired by Vince McMahon at Breakdown, not at Breakdown, that's when he lost the championship back in 1998. But just so many iterations of Stone Cold returning, him returning to save the WWF after he had turned heel, only to turn his back again on the WWF. I mean, just so many moments. And as you guys know, I am a Stone Cold fan. He is the one that got me hooked to WWE, WWF at the time. And he is the reason that I am sitting here doing this show, is Stone Cold. So I know it's not an interesting choice, because he is the most popular superstar of all time. I don't think there's any question about that. I really don't. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, is that nobody burned hotter than Stone Cold Steve Austin. There are many, many, many examples of people burning longer and at a very high temperature, but nobody burned higher and hotter than Stone Cold Steve Austin in his prime from 90, even late 97, through his career in-ring ending at WrestleMania in Seattle, Washington, at WrestleMania 19, facing The Rock in 2003. So, again, setting the stage here, back to No Way Out, which is the pay-per-view before his final match, Eric Bischoff faced Stone Cold Steve Austin. But leading up to this, Stone Cold had been out of the WWF for several months, 8 months, prior to this, because he had walked out of WWE. And it's no secret what happened. It's a well-documented and covered story that he didn't like the creative of WWE, and Vince McMahon wanted Stone Cold Steve Austin to do the job to Brock Lesnar on a Monday Night Raw in a non-advertised match in Atlanta, Georgia. And Stone Cold and Vince had been on the phone even early morning hours that morning of, saying that, or Stone Cold telling Vince that I don't like the creative and that he's not going to do it. And eventually he came around and told Vince that he was going to do it, and then didn't show up to the arena. I believe Bubba Ray Dudley was the substitute for Brock Lesnar in that particular match. I don't know why I remember that, but I do. Kind of irrelevant, but just interesting how small details stick with you. But while I can see Stone Cold's frustration 110%, because Stone Cold is the biggest draw of the modern era of wrestling, period. And Brock Lesnar was an up-and-coming star that was big, athletic, really, really good credentials as a two-time NCAA champion. Would have most likely won an Olympic gold medal had he gone for the Olympics in his prime. And you have an unadvertised build between these two on a Monday Night Raw. And not only that, but Brock Lesnar was going to beat Stone Cold Steve Austin. So that is a bunch of garbage. Totally agree with Stone Cold on that creative. But the problem was, and Stone Cold will tell you this, his approach to that being not showing up, turning his back on the company. Apparently Stone Cold was burned out. He was hurt. And then you get this crappy creative thrown in. It was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And since that day, he basically went dark. He didn't respond to phone calls from Vince, from management, even Jim Ross himself. Until Jim Ross sent him a card in the mail that said, if you want to talk, I'm here. I mean, this is, by the way, guys, you can go look at the documentary on this on the WWE Network. It's a fascinating story. And Jim Ross sent Stone Cold a card that said that. And next thing you know, Stone Cold and Jim Ross are on the phone talking. And the rest is history. Jim Ross was a key element in being able to bring the two parties of Vince and Stone Cold back together. Vince ended up finding Stone Cold, but obviously Stone Cold was coming back to face Eric Bischoff. The storyline on TV was that Vince McMahon was going to fire Eric Bischoff if he didn't grab Raw by the throat and choke Raw. And that there was only one man that can take that can take Raw by the throat, and that was Stone Cold Steve Austin. So for, I believe it was 3 or 4 weeks, Bischoff went on a wild goose chase for Stone Cold for a number of weeks, only to come up empty-handed. And eventually, he gets to No Way Out, says that he's going to forfeit the match. Stone Cold's music hits. The crowd goes absolutely insane, and we're with Austin for every single move. Ended up stunning Bischoff 4 times in the match. It was just a moment. I remember just being so just excited. I mean, that's really the only word I can think of. To see Stone Cold again, it had felt like so long, and there was such a gaping hole on Monday Night Raw. So to see him return here when pay-per-views were still, you know, pay to view, and it wasn't just the network. Remember, networks didn't exist back then, so we had to shell out. When I say we, my friends and I kind of pooled our money together to shell out the $50 or $60, whatever it was, to watch this pay-per-view. And man, it was worth every penny to see this. And it was the highlight of the show. The only match I can think of that was other than this one that was on the show was Steiner and Triple H, I believe. So after this, obviously Stone Cold went on to have his final match with The Rock at WrestleMania 19 in Seattle. And so those are my memories of it. It's such a moment that I can relive over and over and over. And I challenge anybody to find a star that can get this kind of gut level real reaction in 2019. That it just doesn't exist. The answer is it doesn't exist. Okay. It's like limits. The limit does not exist. That's kind of where we're at with that answer here. I mean, and to find somebody that is this authentic that the fans just beloved is impossible to manufacture and even harder to come across more than once in a generation. So I'll let you guys listen to this. I won't keep you on there too long because I know that you're not here to listen to the audio and you're here to, I would think, listen to my analysis. But I'll let you listen and then I'll be right back with some more thoughts on it.
So Stone Cold, I know you can hear me back then. We still have time to do the right thing and I will forfeit this match to you right now.
So that is when Austin made his entrance into the Bell Center in Montreal. And man, there wasn't one person in that crowd who, despite what Austin did, and that was one of the worst things you can do, is walk out, not show up for work, and basically just spit in the face of every single person that ever supported him. And just to still get that reaction, the fans just had no ill will. They just wanted to see Austin. They wanted to see Stunners. They wanted to see Beer. They just wanted to see him raise some hell again. And they got it. They absolutely got it. It was one of the, probably the highlight of the pay-per-view. Not even just the highlight of the pay-per-view. Highlight of the year, in my estimation. And it was one that I won't soon forget. So just a little bit more audio so you guys can get a little bit more of a feel of how the audience was reacting to him. And this is the first stunner that he delivered to Eric Bischoff. One of four. I mean, you talk about emotional investment, something that is lacking in today's version and presentation of professional wrestling. That is emotional investment to the max. Basically, I mean, the crowd showering Austin in their love and just basically saying, we miss the hell out of you. We forgive you. It was quite a moment. It was quite a moment. I mean, the match wasn't meant to be competitive. Austin looked like he was having a blast out there. He ended up giving Bischoff three stunners to pin him and then ended up giving a fourth after the match was over. And JR adds 110% to anything that happens inside that ring. I say that almost every time because Jim Ross's voice is attached to so many amazing moments. It's synonymous with excitement and just the Attitude Era and even beyond. So just loved it. And if you guys haven't seen it, again, it's not a five-star match. It's not meant to be. It's about the emotional return of Stone Cold and the fans embracing him, forgiving him. And it was a hell of a moment. It's just amazing. So speaking of emotional moments, as I rattle my brain, next week, I'm going to be doing the not just an emotional moment for fans, an emotional investment for fans, but also a hell of a match on top of it. And that is Eddie Guerrero versus Brock Lesnar at No Way Out 2004. No Way Out seems to really do it for me. I don't know why. But No Way Out 2004, when Eddie Guerrero ended up defeating Brock Lesnar. And obviously Bill Goldberg interfered and helped Eddie Guerrero capture the belt. But there is nobody quite like Eddie Guerrero. The ability to just make you feel is something that Eddie was amazing at doing. And so I'm going to share some memories next week about that match and also about his death that happened in 2005, which really, and I'm man enough to admit this, I mean, it brought me to tears. I didn't know the guy personally. I don't think probably 99% of fans knew him personally. That's not the point. The point is that he was able to really make you realize how damn good he was and create an emotional attachment with fans that he never even met. That's a hell of an accomplishment and compliment to him as a man, not just as a performer, but as a man. I'll never forget that moment as well. I think it was October of 2005, but I'll get into the specifics about that next week with his capture of the Undisputed Championship, defeating Brock Lesnar, and then obviously his death in 2005. So I'm going to take a quick break, but on the other side of this, I'm going to get to some wrestling news that's coming through the wire on this Sunday, and then we'll wrap things up and let you guys go watch Game of Thrones, or just let me go watch Game of Thrones, because that's what I'm going to do after I am done recording this. So, stay right here. We'll be right back. So there's this YouTube channel you guys have to check out. It's called Cook the Books, and it's a new channel where Daddy and his daughter are recreating recipes. Watson, who's the dad, and Nina, who's the daughter, they go shopping, they prepare and cook together. It's a really great bonding session, a ton of fun, and getting Nina involved in experiencing new foods, ingredients, tastes, and cultures. It's a great YouTube channel. It's called Cook the Books. That's youtube.com/cookthebooks. You guys got to check this out. Trust me, you'll be glad you did. Okay, so let's get to some wrestling news that's coming through the wire here on this Sunday evening. As I scroll through, and by the way, guys, I don't look at sites that I know are not reputable. Okay, when I get my wrestling news, it's typically from either WWE.com. I mean, that's about as solid as it gets, or the major news websites. So I don't go and just make up news or headlines or dig through some dirt to make sure that the things I tell you are controversial. I'm giving you real news that has been confirmed, or at least has been kind of just focused on to give you guys the best possible accuracy for the news. So right now, apparently there are for the plans for Becky Lynch at WrestleMania 36, as I'm reading through this news wire here, it was previously been reported that WWE was planning a match between Lynch and Flair at 36. Oh, thank please. But according to Dave Meltzer, those plans have been scrapped, which is why the match is happening at Money in the Bank. I totally wholeheartedly agree with that. Not that this won't change 25 times in next year, but the reason they are putting Lynch versus Flair at Money in the Bank is so they have a different match planned for next year's Mania for Becky Lynch. So if Rousey wants to return for that show, the match isn't out of the question, but it's not the planned match. Originally, Lynch versus Flair had been the lead idea for 2020 heading to this past year's WrestleMania and was part of the reason for the three-way. So look, I think I can say with fairly high confidence that the majority of fans would say in unison, again, it's not that these two don't put on really good matches or have really good chemistry. We've seen it. I mean, I don't need Flair and Lynch again in the main event, at least not facing each other. We need to separate them. Please. I don't know. Something just needs to happen. They just need to ignore each other for 6 to 12 months. I'm begging WWE. After Money in the Bank, they need to just go their separate ways. I think that's best for everybody. I think that WWE thinks that they just have an ace in the hole and they have a really good go-to, and that's true. They do. But when you do this to this feud with Charlotte and Becky has been going on for 6 months plus now. More than that, it goes really all the way back to the SummerSlam triple threat where Lynch turned heel and turned her whole career around. And you have Charlotte just constantly being interjected into every match because she is Vince McMahon's fantasy, basically, and has to have Charlotte in every single match that is of historic proportions. They have to include Charlotte. And so it's really from August of 18 until the current time frame that it has been Charlotte versus Becky. Yes, Ronda was thrown in there, but the components, two out of those three components are still the same, and I'm ready for things to be different. I'm ready for Becky and Charlotte to move on, and I don't even know officially what brand Becky's on. I would assume that she's going to drop one of the two belts on Money in the Bank, probably to Charlotte. We will get rid of this silly Becky Two Belts chant and the nickname. It never stuck with me. I'm not a fan of Becky Two Belts. It sounds contrived. It just sounds a little hokey. There's no edge to it. It doesn't do anything for me. I don't know. Maybe it's me. It sounds soft. It doesn't have a bite to it. It's just, okay, yeah, you carry two belts. Cute. I don't know. But anyway, I think she ends up dropping the SmackDown Women's Championship to Charlotte. Becky officially moves to Raw, defeats Lacey Evans, retains the Raw Championship, Raw Women's Championship. She stays on Raw, and we move on with our lives. That way, Charlotte can stay on SmackDown, and they each hold a belt. And I think Charlotte will be, and she has been, a very good heel champion, especially now that she is a few years even more seasoned from being a SmackDown Women's Champion. And I know that she was recently the SmackDown Women's Champion after defeating Asuka, which, again, was nobody explained that. How does that not get explained that she got that championship match so close to WrestleMania? Nobody does. Nobody explains it. Nothing. We're just supposed to not care. It's ridiculous. But I think Charlotte could be a hell of a champion, and she will be. So Becky Lynch moves to Raw officially. At least in my estimation, we get Charlotte on SmackDown, and they hell away from each other. All right, let's move on to another storyline here, another story coming through the news wire, and that is Shane McMahon is going to crown new champions on SmackDown Live. So WWE.com has announced that Shane will crown new tag team champions on the upcoming May 7th edition of SmackDown Live. I don't think this really is a surprise to anybody because Matt and Jeff were forced to surrender and relinquish their tag team titles because Jeff would be going on the shelf for a knee injury. So I don't think that that is going to be a shock to anybody, but let's see. So I'm just looking through some other notes on this story. I mean, I guess it's going to depend on how he names those champions. Since he's a heel, I could see him awarding the championships to a heel tag team. But my hunch is that it's a tournament that ends up culminating at Money in the Bank. And I think you have either maybe you have qualifying matches. If it's like a fatal four-way tag team match, or if it's a tournament to ultimately culminate at Money in the Bank, either way, it culminates at Money in the Bank, I think, and you get new tag team champions there. So other news, Dana White confirms that Brock Lesnar has retired from the UFC. So Brock officially done with UFC. Does that open the door for him to return to WWE? Absolutely. I think Vince McMahon is going to still look at Brock as a short to medium-ish term star that can be utilized to make other stars while he's still viable and still in his prime, albeit at the tail end of his prime. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. Brock Lesnar is not really a spring chicken anymore. He still can go. I wouldn't mess with Brock Lesnar even if I had a sledgehammer and attacked him from behind. I still would not feel at an advantage. But Vince McMahon is smart to capitalize on Brock Lesnar and bring him back for a 1 to 2 year deal and see what they can do with him. Now, do I need Brock versus Goldberg again? No. God, please, no. I don't need Brock versus Goldberg again. That has been done and done and then done again. And I've seen it. I've been through it. And I think I'm good with not seeing another one. But with Brock Lesnar being essentially or presumably with WWE for the next couple of years, I just hope that they give him some kind of new presentation. I'm not saying turn him babyface because I don't think that'll be a tall order. But I think that if you do something different with him, I don't know what that would be. Maybe have him wrestle on Raw once in a while. Tear crap up. Make news. Do anything but the typical formula. While a successful formula in the past has more than run its course. And that formula would be Brock shows up, makes mean faces, does his little hop-to-hop side, while Paul Heyman does all of the lifting in terms of speaking for him. Brock makes more mean faces, smiles, and then walks off. I need more from Brock than that on Raw. And assuming he's with Raw, I would assume that that's what he's going to be doing. Although with the Fox deal coming and SmackDown Live moving to Fox, there's no clear-cut decision there. But nonetheless, I think he could be utilized on either brand and maybe end up culminating in a match with Lars Sullivan at SummerSlam. I don't know. I mean, that's just a theory, one of the theories out there. But smart for Vince to capitalize, use him while he's still in his prime, and basically build stars off of him. That's what you do if you're WWE. So, all right. Other news, as I'm going on the news wire, John Moxley returns. So John Moxley is back. If you guys don't know who John Moxley is, he is the alter ego of Dean Ambrose. He was one of the first successful gimmicks that Dean Ambrose had prior to being Dean Ambrose in the Dean Ambrose version of WWE. I'm just reading it here. The former world champion is the focus of this new video, which you can check out below. He physically breaks his way out of what appears to be a prison or perhaps an asylum and sets out into the city streets of West Hollywood, California, dragging blood and barbed wire behind him with every step. He changed his Twitter handle to @JonMoxley with a bio that simply reads professional wrestler. Love it. Oh, I love this. Thank you. The video was just posted on midnight of May 1st. Prior to signing with WWE, Moxley, whose real name is Jonathan Good, by the way, that's Dean Ambrose's real name, had a lengthy run in the independent scene known for his violent in-ring style and dark, generally vulgar promos. So I love it. Thank you, John Moxley, for being a professional wrestler and not an entertainer. Okay? Love it. Thank you. So Dean Ambrose, the question has been answered. Is he still going to wrestle? You damn right. Where? We don't know. But speculation is running rampant that it's going to be at AEW, Double or Nothing in Vegas at the end of this month, which is building more and more momentum. And by the way, guys, holy crap. If you haven't seen Cody Rhodes' promo for Double or Nothing, you're doing yourself a huge disservice. I posted this on my Twitter feed, or you can just YouTube it. Cody Rhodes has been able to garner more emotion from me in 4 minutes than WWE has in 4 months. And look, I love WWE. No question. I have a podcast named after WWE. No official affiliation, by the way. That's not the point. The point is that there is an alternate version in presentation of professional wrestling that allows fans to feel more and not just skip, put smiles on people's faces. Once in a while, you need to bring tears to their faces, bring anger to their faces. Not everything has to end with a smile. This notion that everything has to be happy and smiling and, oh my God, WWE is missing the boat here when they are taking this philosophy to heart and implementing this in every pay-per-view that they have. Make people angry once in a while. Why not? So, if you guys haven't seen the Cody Rhodes promo, do it. It's just amazing. It's not. There's no screaming, no yelling, no special effects, fireworks. Just nothing but Cody Rhodes standing there, speaking to you. It's amazing what can be done when things are simpler and done right. And done with emotion and vigor and authenticity. It's amazing. Take a look. YouTube it or just go to my Twitter feed. It was last week sometime. Jaw-dropping. And I felt something there. So maybe John Moxley, a.k.a. Dean Ambrose, a.k.a. Jonathan Good, ends up appearing on Double or Nothing. My hunch would be, if I was a betting man, see what I did there? If I was a betting man at Double or Nothing, I would go Double or Nothing, and I would say that Dean Ambrose, a.k.a. John Moxley, I'll just call him John Moxley because that's what he wants me known as now, appears at Double or Nothing. Double or Nothing in AEW is something I'm really looking forward to. And maybe I'll do an AEW segment on this show if things start to catch on. And, of course, if you guys are interested. So that's something that I will be looking into as well. Because AEW is selling a lot of t-shirts and is being talked about a lot on social media for a company that hasn't even run a single show yet. Amazing. But now they have to come time. It's time to execute now. It's time to not just build up anticipation, which they've done very well, but it's time to now take things and take their money to the bank and cash the check. That is where they are at now. So I'm looking forward to it. I think that many other people are as well. So the other thing, Goldberg, Brock, and Lesnar obviously are set to return to WWE. Or Goldberg, Brock, and Undertaker, I meant to say. Goldberg, Brock, and Undertaker. Man, I don't even know what to say about that other than WWE and just they better use them wisely to build other stars. That's what I said about Brock, and that goes the same for Taker and same for Goldberg. So that's really the only relevant news coming out of the newswire. A somewhat quiet weekend for the news cycle when it comes to professional wrestling. And I just wanted to give you guys as well, because I know I have a wrestling nostalgia segment, which I did at the top of the show. And now I wanted to give you guys a little bit of, hey, what the heck's going on currently? What's going on now? So a little bit of preview. And obviously Raw is tomorrow night. And then SmackDown Live is Tuesday night. And then my show is Thursday with, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the show, Angelique, who will be joining me and giving her thoughts on Raw, SmackDown, the current product as a whole, and lots of other cool little tidbits. So, All right. Well, that's all the time I have for you guys today, because as I said, I got to get myself ready. I got to go shower. I got to like grab a little snack and then get myself in bed so I can watch Game of Thrones. And yeah, so I'm excited. All right. Well, that's all the time, guys. As always, I'll talk to you next time.